that the Bible is the only authoritative revelation of God's mind and purpose, that it declares that Yahweh is perfect and supreme, and that his purpose is paramount. Then it says that his purpose is to manifest himself in his family, that Jesus Christ is the firstborn of this new creation and was a perfect manifestation of his Father, the foundation seed of the family which would follow, that he calls us to know him as our Father, that we also, as with Christ, so ourselves, that we also might reveal him as his children. And then included in the circle as well, except we didn't have room to write it on this particular overhead, is that famous statement from Brother Thomas, which we also have in our circle, which says this: men were not ushered into being for the purpose of being saved or lost. God manifestation, not human salvation, was the great purpose of the eternal spirit. The salvation of a multitude is incidental to the manifestation, but was not the end proposed. The eternal spirit intended to enthrone himself on the earth, and in so doing, to develop a divine family from among men, every one of whom shall be spirit, because born of the spirit, and that this family shall be large enough to fill the earth when perfected to the entire exclusion of flesh and blood. And many of you will know, of course, that excellent statement from Brother Thomas, which comes from one of the heralds of the kingdom and age to come. So there is the center then of everything that we have as the purpose of our ecclesia and of ecclesial life. And what we then did is, having made that circle in the middle, we drew five lines out from the middle circle. Now, why five? And the answer is because we felt that there were five key areas of ecclesial activity that can all be demonstrated from the scriptures. That there are five main parts of activity in the truth. Now here they are. The first is matters of worship. The second is matters of witness. The third is matters of learning. The fourth is matters of service. And the fifth is matters of order. Now, I'm going to take you through each of these, but I think we can show from a scriptural basis that these are the five key aspects of ecclesial life. That all ecclesial activity, in the end, falls into one of those five things. It's either related to worship, or to witness, or to learning, or to service, or to order. So what we wanted to make sure is that each of these lines grew out from that middle center. That each of those lines took its meaning and its purpose from that central core at the middle there, the core purpose of it all. So let me take you out down one of the lines now, so that you can see, in fact, how we went about this. So if I take matters of worship first, well, here's what it looks like. Now, I'm not sure if this will all come up on the overhead. Let's see. Did we get it all? Oh, yes, we did. We got the whole thing, so that's good. So imagine here that on the left side, you now have that central circle. This is the core purpose that we've already established that revolves around the supremacy of God. So now we have matters of worship, and you'll notice that the arrows go both ways. Now, by the way, if it's decided that it's useful to copy these overheads, I'd be very happy if they were to be copied. There's no problems with that. I don't know whether we need approval for that, but if you're worried about taking notes and you can't keep up with me, maybe that would be a good solution. Now, the reason why the arrows go both ways is to make the point that what follows out in matters of worship both flows out of the core purpose, but must also seem to relate back into the core purpose. It goes both ways, as it were. So the first thing we did was come up with a core value that related to this particular aspect of our behavior in the truth. And the core value that we came up with was that in matters of worship, we wish to elevate God's holiness in the same way that Christ exalted his Father. So we take Christ as our key, don't we? We want to elevate the Father, and we want to follow the example of Christ in the way in which he elevated the Father in his life. So that's, if you like, a core value that relates to everything in the meeting now about matters of worship. Now, from that core value, we then built some main objectives. And these are the central objectives that we drafted in our meeting concerning, therefore, matters of worship that flow out of that particular core value. And the first is to honor God's holiness in word and thought consistent with Bible teaching. The second is to offer praise to God in the spirit of reverence and dignity. And the last is to encourage the habit of daily personal prayer in communion with the Father. So these are the great objectives we have in all matters of worship in the ecclesia, that these things should endeavor to be fulfilled. And then lastly, and you notice how significant this is, by the way, lastly, flowing out from those objectives are the actual activities that we have in ecclesial life that are related to matters of worship. And of course, the key things are: we have the memorial meeting, we have our readings, we have hymn singing, we have prayers, and we have song and praise evenings or song and praise gatherings. These are the main activities of worship that we have in ecclesial life. Now, by the way, there might be some others. I know there could be some other things. It's for each ecclesia to decide what those activities might be. But you see the point about this. This was such a marvelous thing when we discovered the power of this thought, and that's this. Do you know that what we tend to do in ecclesial life is we regard our activities themselves as sacred? Now, I'm not saying, by the way, that we'll ever change having a memorial meeting, because, well, that's down in Scripture that we ought to so meet. But you know, the actual activities of ecclesial life are not in themselves sacred. What's sacred is the objectives behind the activities. That's the important bit. If a person says, well, I've been a faithful brother or a faithful sister, I've come to the meeting for 47 years, I've attended the memorial meeting. Yes, but unless that person has grown to understand these things, the mere attendance of the activity itself doesn't actually mean anything, does it? It's obviously an example of great faithfulness. But simply attending activities is not what the truth's all about. What the truth's all about is finding the objectives behind those activities. And those objectives in turn grow out of a core value. And that core value in turn comes out of that great central core purpose. And what this is really saying is this: if God is truly supreme, because that's the core purpose, then we would obviously want to elevate God's holiness as best as we could, because he is supreme. Who else would we want to worship but the Father? And how necessary that we should be focused on worshiping him properly. So core purpose becomes core value, and core value becomes objectives, and objectives then translate into the actual physical activities that take place in the ecclesia. But we must always remember that the purpose of that is to ensure that those objectives are in fact being fulfilled in the life and in the spirit of the ecclesia. Let me take you to the second one. So here now we come to matters of witness. Now this is going to be slightly harder for me to get on completely, so here it is. So again, therefore, we have firstly the fact that we have aspects of witnessing to the truth in ecclesial life. Now, what might be the great core value of that aspect of our ecclesial activities? Well, the answer is that we want to declare God's purpose. And we want to declare God's purpose as Christ proclaimed him. Now, why would we want to declare God's purpose? Well, brothers and sisters, it grows out of the core purpose here, doesn't it? That if God is supreme, and if God's purpose is supreme, then what other purpose can we talk about that could possibly save mankind? What other purpose is there to declare but the Father's purpose? Without the Father's purpose, all is lost for everybody. So it becomes an imperative upon us that we should set forth the purpose of God, because he truly is supreme. There is no other purpose under heaven, ultimately. So why wouldn't we want to declare that purpose and the saving truth that comes with understanding that purpose? So what might our objectives be then in that part of our ecclesial life? Well, these are the objectives that we wrote down. Firstly, to organise the regular and systematic proclamation of Bible truth. Why regular and systematic? Because we want to take in the whole counsel of God. Because we want our lectures to declare the whole purpose of God. Because we want, during the course of our year, for the lectures to have covered every great and fundamental part of the Father's purpose. Because that's what we're trying to declare. So we always make sure every year that our lectures include matters of judgment, matters of the kingdom, matters of the promises to Abraham and David, matters relating to Israel, signs of the times and the nations, the doctrine of the hope of the resurrection, and so on and so forth, so that the whole counsel of God has been declared in our lectures. I think it's essential, brothers and sisters, that every ecclesia is preaching the truth. No ecclesia ought ever to say, well, we don't preach the truth. We must do. It's a divine imperative that comes from, if we really believe in this core purpose, that God's purpose is paramount, we are compelled to speak of that purpose. In our ecclesia, in the last 15 years, we've had 80 baptisms from outside. And that's not, I think, because we're anything special or anything unique. But we do believe in this principle, that that purpose compels us to talk of the Father's work. And we feel that that work has been blessed because we are very clear on that objective. You see the second thing, to instill a knowledge of and a passion for Bible doctrine. Well, why should we do that? Well, because if this is the Father's revelation of his purpose, then we want to know all of it. And we want to be passionate about knowing the doctrines of saving truth. And one of the greatest benefits of public lectures in most ecclesias is for all the young people growing up. Even if there are no other interested friends present, our own young people are grounded and settled and founded upon good Bible lectures that set forth the whole counsel of God. And many a young person has grown up with their strength in the truth rooted, at least in part, on the public lectures they heard Sunday by Sunday, a passion for Bible doctrine. Whenever I take someone in the truth in terms of tuition for baptism, I always like to stretch them. So everything that they're asked to do, I want them to prove for themselves from the Bible. Take the promises to David. Now, we all know the promises to David in the 2nd of Samuel chapter 7. So the first thing I say to them are there 5 elements to the promise to David? Or is there 6 elements? Or is there 7 elements? Or is there 8 elements? Because I've heard all 4 solutions, and I want you to decide which is correct, and I want you to prove it from Scripture. Now, off you go. And you see, there's so much for us to learn, so that even in what we regard as fundamental doctrines, that we're sharp on them, that we're keen on them. We want to instill that passion in our young people. There's nothing as good as an enthusiastic lecture on the promises to Abraham. I never get tired of the promises to Abraham, do you? Never get tired of them. So we want that passion to be there. And lastly, of course, we want to encourage personal witness in conversation and conduct, to make the members of our ecclesia understand that gospel proclamation is not limited to the public lecture platform, but to our lives. Our lives are a witness to the truth. So there might be all sorts of activities now that set forth, that fulfill those objectives. We might have lectures and seminars and debates and leaflet distribution, personal tuition courses, correspondence courses, websites, cottage classes, contact work. There's all sorts of things that go on as the actual activities of witness in ecclesial life. But they all grow out of these objectives. And these objectives all grow out of that core value, and that core value finds its meaning and its purpose in that central circle, which says that at the heart of it all, we really believe in the supremacy of God. Now you see, you know that about 10 years ago, maybe 12, but around about 10 years ago, some people in the Brotherhood began using seminars. And a number of ecclesias said, "What's all this seminar business then? What's wrong with the public lectures? We've always had public lectures. What's all this newfangled stuff?" How many parts of the Brotherhood would there be now who don't use seminars? Why do we use seminars? Because we discover that they've been effective in bringing people to the truth. Is our public lecture sacred? No, it's not. What's sacred is these objectives: that we want to organise the regular and systematic proclamation of Bible truth. And because that's the real objective, then we will find whatever means best fulfils that purpose in advancing the Father's cause. Our lectures per se are not sacred in themselves. No ecclesial activity is sacred in itself. The thing that never changes, though, is the objectives that stand behind what we do. So there needs to be a readiness of spirit that says that maybe there are times when we ought to change what we do and how we do it so that the objectives might best be fulfilled, and so that we're not tied to the activities and as an end in themselves. You know, we give lectures but nobody comes. But oh well, we've done our bit, you know. Well, maybe we haven't done our bit. Because until we've really sorted out what the objectives were, maybe our public lectures are completely missing the group of people we want to get through to. So it's not the activity that's sacred, it's the objectives that grow out of the core value that in turn has come from that great central purpose. Now let's take matters of learning. Matters of learning. So what might the core value be for matters of learning? Well, again, it's very simple. We want to understand God's mind as Christ knew his Father. Why would we want to do that? Well, because if God is truly supreme, then we have to know his mind. It's the only mind that we need to know. It's the only mind that we must know. You know, sometimes, brothers and sisters, people say in ecclesial life, "Oh, you know, all this Bible study business, that's not for me, I'm not an academic." Bible study's got nothing to do with academia, brothers and sisters. It's all about understanding the Father's mind. And we all have to know that mind if we are to share in the divine purpose. And that's why we're studying. And that's why we have activities of learning in ecclesial life. Not so that we might fill our margins with interesting facts, but so that in the development of those facts into principles, we might live the truth and so manifest the Father's mind in our lives. And so the Bible becomes to us the living book and the living code by which we will live. But if we don't know the principles, we cannot live them. So what might the objectives be for matters of learning? Well, we wrote down, firstly, to promote the value of sound Bible exposition. We don't want sermons in our ecclesia. You know, a person thinks of an idea that they'd like to talk about, and then they string together a handful of quotes that support what their idea was in the first place. That's what ministers do in churches. What we want is the exposition of the word, so that the word comes alive. And at the end of the exposition, the brother sits down and you think, yes, that's what the Bible really says about that. And that is God's mind revealed to us. Not the brother's mind, not the brother's words, the Bible's words, the Father's mind. That's what Bible exposition is all about. You know, some people say that, well, we don't want exposition, we want exhortation. You know, brothers and sisters, if the word of God is expounded properly, it will always be exhortational. Exhortation flows naturally from the exposition of the word. You can't help but find exhortation, because what Bible study is all about is the three great stages. Find the facts, establish the principle, apply the exhortation. That's the three great steps of Bible study. When brethren are young, they only ever get to step one. And so their first lecture or their first talk tends to be an accumulation of cross-references and Hebrew words. Because all they've managed to do is assemble the facts, and they've got millions of them. But they haven't got to do anything with the facts in terms of saying, now, out of those facts, what do we learn? And the next stage of Bible study is to establish the principles that we grasp from those facts. Because only when we've discovered the principles have we got to the living power of the word, so that we might discover exhortations in daily life. So we study that we might find principles. And principles are the expression of God's mind. And principles are eternal. And principles exhort us daily. All good Bible exposition leads inevitably to exhortation. Now, you might think that the second one's a bit unusual, because in a section devoted to the matter of learning the truth and the Father's mind, why would we say something like to read and appreciate the pioneer writings of the truth? Isn't that elevating these brethren above and beyond what is necessary? And the answer is yes, that could be so. But the reason why we put that down in our ecclesia as one of our objectives is only for this very simple reason, that it is our settled conviction that the writings of the pioneers are valuable for this single notable reason, and that's this: that they positively breathe the spirit of the core purpose, the greatness of God and his supremacy in all the earth, and what God manifestation is really all about. And we believe that those pioneer writers really did know that subject, brothers and sisters, and it exudes out of their writings. You can't help but be touched by the breathings of that idea as you read their writings. And all they do anyway is take us back into the Bible. We're not following Brother Thomas or Brother Roberts in order that we might devotedly adhere to what they say. We want to get back to the Word. But in terms of helping us and breathing the spirit of the central purpose of our ecclesia, we believe that those writings are invaluable. We live in an age now, strangely enough, when we have young people that are able to take PhDs and degrees and all sorts of tertiary education, but they can't read Mystery of the Covenant of the Holy Land explained. And they struggle with Elpis Israel, Part 1. And they've never even dared to attempt Eureka. But they can obtain a tertiary qualification without difficulty. Now, we always have a pioneer writing of some sort being studied in our ecclesia as much as we possibly can. And the last thing, of course, is to develop the habit of daily personal Bible study. Remember how the last one in matters of worship said to develop the habit of daily personal prayer, and to develop the habit of personal witness. Well, here is to develop the habit of personal Bible study, because if all the Bible study that's being done in the ecclesia is only done at the ecclesial level and not in the life of the individual, then we believe our ecclesia's failed. We want to create within the hearts and souls of every member of our ecclesia such a passion to study that they will go home and do that for themselves. Now, you see how liberating that is. Let's look at the activities of ecclesial life. What do we have that are related to matters of learning? Well, we have Bible class, we have Sunday school, we have sisters class, we have CYC, we have home study classes, we have pioneer classes, ecclesial fraternals, special efforts, Bible marking classes, mutual improvement classes. Our ecclesia has all of those things. Are they sacred in their form? And the answer is no. Now, don't get me wrong, of course, we're always going to have a Bible class, aren't we? But what I'm talking about is the form of the class. Now, if these are the great objectives, what needs to be considered in ecclesial life is, are they being fulfilled in the nature of the classes now being run? Imagine, for example, that Bible class was proceeding splendidly week by week, but no one's taking any notes, no one's doing any personal Bible study, everyone's going home and doing absolutely nothing in the Word for themselves. What ought an ecclesia to do? And the answer might be, scrap your Bible class in the format that it currently is. Unless you're achieving your objectives, you need to think about whether you're using the right format. From time to time in our ecclesia, we have therefore stopped all speaking, got all the tables out, as I know this happens in other ecclesias, got the Bibles out and the pencils out, and done workshop sessions instead, so that we make brothers and sisters get into the Word. Because if we simply put a speaker up the front, we may not achieve that objective of developing the habit of daily personal study in the lives of the members of the ecclesia. The activity's not sacred, the objectives are. Now, what's really liberating about this, you see, and this is what we found as an ecclesia, is that it enables you to look at your activities in the ecclesia and to feel that you might with wisdom make a change. And that before everyone draws in their mouth with shock and horror to realize that in fact that might be completely consistent with the objectives that you have. But if you've never written your objectives down, and you don't know what your objectives are, well then you'll continue to do what you've always done in your ecclesia, won't you? But what this does, the writing down of your real objectives does, is it liberates you to think about every activity of the ecclesia and say, is this really the best way? Could we improve it? Is there a better way that we could do this thing so that we can develop a community that know the mind of the Father and that love that mind? So really, this is a very helpful way, or at least we have found it to be a very helpful way to reassess the activities of the ecclesia and make sure that really what we're doing is for absolutely the right reasons and for the right objectives. So now here's the fourth area of ecclesial activity: matters of service. The ecclesia is a vehicle that enables us to help each other in the walk towards the kingdom. Now, what might the core value then be of such an aspect of ecclesial life? And the answer is to manifest God's character as Christ revealed the Father's character. Here in this part of ecclesial life is where we're able to show the very life of the Father in our own lives. Remember what John says, that John says that we cannot say that we love the Father unless we love the brethren. You can't actually love God, can you? In the sense of doing anything for him. You can say you love him, but you can't love him in any actual sense. The way we show that we love God is because we love the brethren. And the way we show our love for the brethren is in the things we do for them. And in that way we show that we love God. So what might the objectives be of this aspect of ecclesial life? Well, we wrote down, to reveal the qualities of God by the daily personal living of Bible principles. To show our love for God by the love of the brethren. And to demonstrate the divine harmony of mercy and truth in all our dealings. Because the way in which we ought to act has to be that marvelous balance of the Father's own character himself. Not an abundance of mercy at the expense of truth. And not the truth alone untempered by acts of sympathy or mercy, but that proper admixture of the two. That is the Father's own way and the Father's own character. And we want to see all of that in ecclesial life as we serve one another towards the kingdom. So what happens in ecclesial life in terms of activities? Well, we have hospitality rosters for those who may be in need. Do you have ecclesial visitors in America and Canada? ecclesial visitors, I think in England, Brother Harry, and certainly in New Zealand, would be a brother or sister, or maybe a couple, two couples, who are there to assist in matters of difficulty or sensitivity in the ecclesia, where there is a need for help. Generally, perhaps an older couple who can go along to someone in need and say, "We understand there could be a little problem here. Is there anything we can help with? What can we do to help?" And so we have ecclesial visitors. The giving of counsel and advice to one another. Welfare discussions in the arranging brethren, that the needs of the ecclesia might be reviewed. The offering of special prayers for those in need in the ecclesia and those in need in other parts of the ecclesial world. So there's a whole area of ecclesial activity that centres on our service to one another, that we might reveal the Father's character in our lives. And the mere creation of a roster is not the objective, is it? The mere holding of office of ecclesial visitor is not the fulfilment of the objective. These are the objectives. And so what we want to know in our ecclesia is not merely whether we have an ecclesial visitor or whether we've ticked off that we've done this or that, but whether these objectives are being fulfilled, because they grow out of this core value, and this core value grows out of this core purpose. Because if the Father is truly supreme, then we want to manifest the Father's character in the ecclesial life. And lastly, we have matters of order. Now, matters of order relate to those things in ecclesial life whereby, for the good of the whole, we have to have certain administrative arrangements that the ecclesia might be governed in wisdom. And as most of you will know, it is one of those unfortunate truths that as an ecclesia gets bigger, it needs to have more order. It's just a reality of life, in ecclesial life. So what might be the purpose of all the administrative side of ecclesial life? Matters of administration. Well, even there, we want to have a core value. And the core value is that we might uphold God's principles as Christ honoured him. So that even in the administrative arrangements of the ecclesia, it is the Father's principles that come through as paramount and supreme. So the objectives that we have for matters of administration and order in our ecclesia are as follows: to apply the wisdom of Bible reasoning to all arrangements, to nurture a positive environment for spiritual growth, and to inspire to godliness by mutual consent without quenching individual liberty. You know, to apply the wisdom of Bible reasoning to all arrangements. Funny thing, you know, but from time to time you go to arranging brethren's meetings and all manner of terribly important things are discussed. The gutters are blocked. A light on the outside of the hall has been broken. There is a need for a new cup. Or as we had on one occasion in our ecclesia, there is a need for a discussion on whether we should have wipes for the cup. You know, all those sorts of terribly important things that take up arranging brethren's meetings for hour after hour, and we can sit there with our Bibles closed. Now you see, if in matters of order we want the Father's mind and thinking to pervade all of our arrangements, then the first thing that arranging brethren must do is make sure they've got their Bibles open every AB meeting. So that whatever the problem is, no matter how humble, no matter how mundane, the first thing we should say is, well, is there a scripture on this? Is there a divine principle that we could find that might guide us on this? What's the Father's mind in this matter? We want scriptural Bible reasoning to pervade all of our arrangements. We want to create a positive environment in which the truth will flourish in all members of the ecclesia. So that whatever particular, well, look what we do have in terms of activities. So, of course, we have arranging brethren, we have committees, we have business meetings, we have rules, we have constitutions for ecclesias, we have guidelines, we have protocols, we have an ecclesial handbook, and we have all these things for the necessary administration of the ecclesia. But behind all the things are the real reasons. And if you don't remember the reasons, you'll start to wonder about the things. You know, one of the funniest things, perhaps not funny, but one of the most interesting things about ecclesial life is that you know where the bulk of the debate is in ecclesial life? It's out here on the edges, isn't it? It's in the detail of the activities. It's where all the controversy and all the debate occurs in ecclesial life. Whether it be in matters of worship or matters of witness or matters of learning or matters of service or matters of order, the debate is out at the edges. And here's the point of this whole circle is, if you divorce the things at the edges from what goes on in the middle, you'll never see the point of what's going on at the edges. And the beauty of this whole thing is it reminds us that what goes on in the activities of the ecclesia is crucially linked to the objectives behind that, and step by step we're brought back into the great central purpose, and we're constantly reminded that that's really what it's all about, and that's why we're doing this, so that the great central purpose can be fulfilled and the Father can develop his divine family on earth, every one of whom shall be spirit. Now, the next thing that our arranging brethren do as a result of looking at those five key areas is we then made a decision. And what we said was this. We said, well, if that's really what ecclesial life is all about, then we want our arranging brethren's meetings to focus on this stuff, the important things, the core values and the objectives. So each arranging brethren's meeting, we now have on the agenda as the first item one of those five key areas: matters of worship, matters of witness, matters of learning, matters of service, matters of order. And at that meeting of the arranging brethren, we talk about how that part of ecclesial life is going in the meeting, and whether the objectives are being fulfilled, and what we could do to better fulfill the objectives by any possible changes. And if there are block gutters, we want to refer those to a hall maintenance committee so that the arranging brethren know as little about the matter of the gutters as possible. We will empower that committee to make a decision on the gutters. But we want the arranging brethren's meetings to review one of those five things. And every sixth meeting is a welfare meeting to discuss the needs of individual brothers and sisters, one by one, on the ecclesial roll. Not in any spirit of criticism, but in the spirit of genuine care for each member as to what we might better do to help them fulfill these great objectives in ecclesial life. So every 6 months we come round the circle of this giant wheel, and we constantly bring the ecclesia back to the centre, back to the centre, back to the centre of what it's really all about. Now let me conclude, at least my part of this, by putting up what I think to be a marvellous, this is just a perfect quotation, I think, that's highly relevant to the story of this wheel that I've talked about tonight. This is Brother Lou Sargent, A Sound Mind, page 94. This is what he says. If problems at the circumference of our faith come to occupy more thought than the certainties at the hub, there will be a shifting of balance. Oh, I think that's a very, very wise statement, brothers and sisters. Of course, the challenge is that ecclesias therefore need to find and to know what is at their hub. Because if you've never found as an ecclesia what's at the hub, then believe me, you'll have lots of arguments about the circumference. And the funny thing is that once the certainties of the hub are known and believed and loved and understood by all members of the ecclesia, then you'll find that many of the discussions that once were problems at the circumference disappear. Because everyone now understands why those things are done in the way that they're done. Because everything links back to the great central purpose in the middle, and everything is seen to have reason. Everything is seen to have logic behind it as to why spiritually we want to do it that way. But divorce the edge from the center, and you'll have constant debate and constant argument as to why we should do things so. Well, there's a quick summary of how we addressed the question of building into an ecclesia. And I'm not saying that this is special or unique. You may well have something similar yourself, but if you haven't, it might be a good starting point to at least make you think about the process. And what we did, by the way, is in our ecclesia, we've actually printed a much more colourful version, but this was the original one, is we've put the circle on a piece of paper, you see. And that circle reminds us of all those key objectives. And then inside, on the other side of the page, we have the whole story of all that chart down to one piece of paper. With all the objectives and all the activities and all the core values there, all going back to the great centre in the middle. And it just so happens that that piece of paper neatly folds in two so that it can go into the front of every brother and sister's Bible. So that they always have with them what the great central purpose of the ecclesia is all about and why we do what we do in every part of ecclesial life. So here endeth the lesson. Are there any questions? Oh, you want a copy? The copy. If permission is granted by the committee, yes, I see a committee hand raised in acquiescence. Yes. Yes. So thank you, Brother Colby. Yes. Yes.
When you presented this to the ecclesia,
yes.
I can only imagine that you had unity of mind who were arranging whoever drafted this up.
Yes.
What happened? How would you overcome a situation where you did not have unity of brethren, so that when it was being presented, some might say, well, these six votes, or really there's only three, or really, you can see how that would do them against something like that.
Well, I think two things. Firstly, I think you're right. I think it illustrates a principle, and that's this. If arranging brethren are not united, then an ecclesia never will be. So the first and fundamental thing is, are your arranging brethren united? And that's really the first step. Now, by the way, that took us 15 nights to write that up. So it doesn't happen quickly, and yet we would say that we always believed those things. All we've done is write down what we knew. But it took us 15 nights. But I believe that that sort of work is so worthwhile for arranging brethren if they can get to the stage of being united. Now, when it comes to presenting to the ecclesia, it doesn't even matter if the ecclesia makes some amendments. If they are good arguments and good amendments, that's absolutely fine, because you might build a wheel in a different way to the way that we have our wheel. You may have six spokes or seven or three. It really doesn't matter in a way, does it? What matters is that your ecclesia are in agreement with the spokes that have been decided upon in that ecclesia. And what we would do in that case is we would spend as long as we needed to meet with the ecclesia and meet with the ecclesia and meet with the ecclesia until we had that right. Because what we would be saying is that until we have a common ground of the central purpose, then no ecclesia can go anywhere. So we'd start at the middle and say, do we have agreement on the central purpose? And only when we had agreement on the central purpose would we start moving out line by line. So yes, it might be a long process, but you must have the support of the members of the ecclesia, absolutely. It can't be imposed upon an ecclesia. Yes, it must be agreed to. Yes.
What are some of the individual liberties if one compromises someone?
Okay. Well, the idea behind that is this. Look, I know different ecclesias have different standards of conduct and many different things. Some ecclesias have certain matters of standards on dress, for example, that others may not. Our ecclesia has certain things that we ask in terms of a dress code. But what we don't want to do is to create an ecclesia of clones, do we? We don't want any of this to become legalism. So in whatever guidelines that we have in ecclesial life, our objective is that they will simply help to create the spiritual environment in which the real objectives can grow and flourish. So rather than giving you a specific detail, well, maybe if I said that our ecclesia asks brethren to wear ties to the memorial meeting, but we don't ask them whether they shall wear a green tie or a pink tie or a blue one. We in fact would accept all three. And so we say we would like that as a standard rather than open neck shirts. But a brother is then free to choose whatever colour of the rainbow he wishes to array himself in. So we don't want all the brethren to look the same in their clothing, but we may have a standard of dress that by mutual consent, notice I think that's the key thing, by mutual consent we agree to whatever standards we agree to. The ecclesia consents to certain standards. It's not imposed on the ecclesia, they mutually agree. But having mutually agreed, we believe that Brother Roberts is right in the ecclesial guide, is that then, for the good of the whole, we submit to the will of the majority so that there be ecclesial peace and harmony in those things. Yes?
What do you do when the objectives and activities are not being carried out faithfully by those who are assigned?
Well, the whole purpose of having the arranging brethren review one of those areas every monthly arranging brethren's meeting is to do just that, is to see whether there is a problem or a difficulty. And if there was, if it was not being fulfilled because of an unfaithful spirit, then we'd want to raise that matter with the brethren concerned or the sisters concerned to find out what the problem was. Maybe they need to be renewed in terms of understanding the objectives. Maybe they've lost sight of them. Maybe they need to be inspired to them again. You know the old thing, isn't it, is that generally behind what appears to be the problem will be the real problem, and that what you're seeing is really just the symptom of the problem. So we'd want to take it from that perspective, that if, you know, at the...
Lord does that.
Yes, or we might appoint someone to go and see them, not necessarily an arranging brother, but we may ask someone else to go and see them if we thought that was the best person. Yes? The library's closed. You are right. Another question? Yes. Yes? Oh, good. That's very good. Yes? Yes? Yes?
Yes? If you come down to a one-on-one class, how would that be arranged? If you have people come into an activity, a seminar,
We have a very